Okay, well, good morning. 8:15 is a nice early start for the first day of breakout. So firstly, I'd like to say thank you very much for coming along. My name's Chris Johnson. I'm a senior technical product manager with Microsoft on the SharePoint team from Redmond. And as you can probably tell, I'm a Kiwi, so please, if you've got any rugby jokes or sheep jokes, just get them out now. We'll see who's laughing in a few weeks' time, but... Gosh, last week was terrible for us, and I had to suffer through Tech Ed in New Zealand coming off that loss. So hopefully this session will go a little better. So today we're going to talk about building Office 365 solutions with Azure. And in particular, I want people to pay attention, and so I've got a little game that we're going to play. Fortunately, the entire room, you know, the nosebleeds up there are empty, and so I think we can play this game. But I've got some prizes. I brought along a whole bunch of books on developing SharePoint solutions with Azure that I'm going to give away. But you have to do something for this. So either you have an intelligent question, then you can stop me anytime and ask me a question. And if it seems reasonable enough and so on, then you'll get a book. Or if you don't agree with an answer I give, you can stick up your hand and give an alternate answer. And if it seems like a reasonable answer, we'll also give you a book for that. And then for those that don't have intelligent questions or intelligent answers, then I've got a third thing where you can just yell jackpot at the top of your voice whenever you see the honeycomb transition in PowerPoint. And I'll give you a tip. Honeycomb transition is on the next slide transition, and that one doesn't count towards a prize. But just it's sort of like a little sample of what to look for. But there's a few of them sprinkled out throughout the session, so if you see one, stand up, yell jackpot as loud as you can, come running down the stairs, and I'll give you a book. So that should hopefully keep you on your toes a little bit. It is 8:15 after all. Okay, so that was the honeycomb transition. But in this session, we're not covering a few of the basics about things like what is Windows Azure and so on, what is cloud computing and things like that. We're going to mainly focus on how to build SharePoint 365 solutions using it. But I'm also going to assume some basic knowledge of SharePoint and SharePoint Online. We're not going to cover all of the basics of that. What we are going to cover is some fundamentals on how... That wasn't the honeycomb transition. The honeycombs are bigger. They're a bit bigger. We are going to cover some of the fundamentals about the development process and so on. And then we're going to dig into some scenarios, four different scenarios. Three of them are the main scenarios we're going to speak about today, about how to do different types of development on 365. And consuming data from Windows Azure or consuming services from Windows Azure. So the first one there, simple, is all just about bringing in some basic data into SharePoint Online from Windows Azure. The hybrid one talks about how you can extend that solution to draw line of business data from an on-premises system into your Office 365 site and some of the techniques that are at your disposal for doing that. The third scenario is kind of a really interesting one, at least to me, and that's what I call the reverse scenario, which is where you don't want to reach out of SharePoint Online to Windows Azure, but you want to reach into SharePoint Online from Windows Azure or from an on-premises system or from, you know, you name it, some other spot. And typically this is, for developers in the audience, this might be what I call headless, where a user is not present and you want to get some data in or out of SharePoint Online, whether it be, you know, list data or a document, or you want to push a document up to SharePoint Online programmatically. An example of that might be maybe some sort of process you've got running on-prem or a process you've got running in Windows Azure, and you want to push that information up into SharePoint. And we'll talk about how to do that using some of the pieces of technology we have at our disposal. We're going to finish up with some identity and security information, just about what some of the options are for you through these different scenarios and what's available and how to secure your various different communications and so on between SPO and Azure and vice versa. And then just do a quick wrap-up summary. So before we move on, just a couple of SharePoint Online development fundamentals I want to cover off here. And specifically, hands up, who has done any SharePoint Online development before? Anybody? A couple of folks? Excellent. Well, we'll cover off a couple of the sort of basic concepts of what's available and how you can put code up into SharePoint Online and what the caveats are there. And then we'll dig into those scenarios that I mentioned earlier on. Okay, so SharePoint Online development really falls into three main buckets from a developer's point of view. The first bucket is stuff you can do through the browser. Not exactly what I call development, I call it sort of more configuration. But this is typically what somebody would be able to do in an organization as a site administrator or something, go in and create lists and libraries and those sorts of things. The second bucket is kind of like the next step up for those folks that want to get a little bit more detailed. And so they're able to use SharePoint Designer to go and do a few extra things that they can't do through the browser. So for example, that might be building a declarative workflow and attaching it to a list, or tweaking around with a master page, for example, or some CSS, or a style sheet, and those sorts of things. And so those are typically a little bit more of a sort of a step up from your average user that wants to do those sorts of things. And the important thing to note there is that from that second step, you can export your site to a WSP. If you want to prototype around in SharePoint Designer and export it as a WSP, you can do that. And then import it into Visual Studio and take a look around inside that and see what it's done. So if you want to get a head start, that's a nice way to see how things work. And then finally, probably the most prevalent for professional developers, obviously, is Visual Studio and the work we could do with code and so on in that tool. And for SharePoint Online, that really boils down to what we call sandbox solutions, which is a piece of technology we have in SharePoint. It's available on-premises and in the cloud, and it's configured very similarly, in fact. But it basically allows you to write code, package it up in a WSP package, which is the standard SharePoint packaging system, and upload it into our sandbox in the cloud and have that code run. So, for example, that might contain a custom web part or a custom workflow activity, for example. And you can package those up, deploy them into your Office 365 site, and away you go. But that can contain both declarative components that you'd have in a WSP, maybe like a list definition or something along those lines. And it can also contain that code for custom things like event receivers, workflow activities, web parts, and the like. And then finally, the last point on here is around the client object model. So whereas a sandbox solution is a piece of code or a piece of development that you've done that's loaded into Office 365 and runs on our servers in the cloud, the client object model is a piece of technology that we ship that allows you to build code that runs either JavaScript-based, Silverlight-based, or the .NET. We have a .NET managed library as well for doing client-to-server calls. And so, for example, you could build a Silverlight component, and we're going to look at an example of this today, a Silverlight component that uses the client-side object model to call into SharePoint. Now, this is available with SharePoint Online, obviously, and so you can write client code that runs in the browser, whether it be JavaScript or Silverlight or what have you, and talk back to SharePoint. So that's really the differentiation between the sandbox solution and the client-side object model where it runs. Okay, so some of the things, some of the caveats and some of the things that are and aren't available to you in SharePoint Online versus what's available to you on-premises. So basically, the client-side object model lets you get access to all the data and lists and libraries and so on in your site, but it doesn't let you go and configure administrative settings and so on in your farm. Obviously, some of those things we don't want you to get at, and those are not available, and also most of the things you can do in a site are available at a site collection level down, and so that's really where the client-side object model focuses. But some of the other things that you can't do in SharePoint Online specifically is you can't get access to the file system, obviously, on our web front ends that run in the cloud. Things like the global assembly cache, we don't allow you to deploy stuff up there. Access to the web.config file. These are just some examples of things that that you might come across when you look at some of the caveats of developing for SharePoint Online. Timer jobs is another big one. That's a piece of code that typically runs on servers in your on-premises environment, and those aren't available to you either. One of the other main things that I wanted to bring up on this slide was particularly talking about how you access external data. And so this is the last main bullet up on the slide here. So typically, a piece of code may want to reach out to another system to interact with it. And SharePoint Online puts a couple of caveats around this and what you can and can't do. The first thing is that you can't access from a sandbox solution, you can't reach out to an external web service currently and get access to data. And so this means we have to be a little bit creative on how we get out of the sandbox and call other systems. And so basically, on premises, you could do this with a full trust solution that you deployed to your servers, no problem at all. You could also do it through business connectivity services. That's the last point there, called BCS, which is a facility for enabling you to connect up to line of business systems in a generic way and calling and getting data. And so that was also available too. And in SharePoint Online, that's not available. So what do we do? Well, Sandbox Solutions, as I mentioned to you, is available with those caveats that we walked through. We built a great set of tools in Visual Studio 2010 for going and building these things. So when you go and install Visual Studio, there's a SharePoint project template you can create and a whole bunch of project item templates that you can pick from. And when you go and create one of those solutions, it'll ask you whether you want to make a full trust solution or a sandbox solution. And based on your answer there, we'll turn on and off features, things like IntelliSense changes and so on, what sort of things are available to you in the tools to add to your solution based on that answer. And so you'll see it scope down to what's available in a sandbox solution if you pick that choice. But we did a whole lot of work in Visual Studio in the 2010 release around a great debugging experience for a developer on a developer workstation, automatic packaging. You don't need to know about the guts of WSP format anymore. You don't need to go and find a third-party tool or what have you. There's a great set of tools out of the box for dealing with all of these things. And these could all be used for building these sandbox solutions for deployment. The last point on here around administration is a really important one that I want to just briefly touch on, is to make sure these things run well and don't hose servers and bring everybody down. There are a set of quotas and resource limits that we put on sandbox solutions so the code doesn't run wild. But in a nutshell, we look at what it does, we look at how much CPU it consumes and so on, and we give these resource quota points to it. And these things add up over time. And eventually, when you run out of resource quota, we shut your solution down. And so what that means is when you run a web page, you might have a web part on there that ran wild, consumed a whole lot of CPU and was a naughty boy. We had to put it on the naughty step. And so we put it into sort of a sandbox solution jail, and it doesn't run until we unblock it or give it some more resource. Now, you can in SharePoint Online, you can go in and assign certain quotas to your site collections and so on. And so that's the way you can go in and assign those. And then in the solution gallery, you can go in and see a little graph of who's using what and what solutions are being good and bad and so on. Aha, perfect, excellent, cool. Somebody's awake. Okay, so the SharePoint object model is... cheers, thank you. The SharePoint object model, in particular the client-side object model, is slightly different than what's available to you on-premises. And so this diagram is really a very, very stylized basic version of what our object model looks like. But in SharePoint Online, the top row disappears. So the server farm portion of that API isn't available to you. And so really everything below your web application down in terms of your site collections and so on, your sites and lists and libraries you can get access to and all the data and those things, that's really just an illustration of what you can get at through that client-side object model. I had fun with my transitions. So it's a new set of APIs available in SharePoint 2010. It's available on-premises and in the cloud. It's much easier to deal with than the SharePoint Web Services. If you've ever had to deal with those in the past, they were kind of a very early invention in our product cycle from a number of releases ago. So they're not exactly nice and modern and optimal. And so we took a step back and looked at how folks want to interact with our API set remotely and came up with a client object model. This underlying this is all based on XML and JSON. And it's we ship three libraries for you to use. There's a JavaScript one, SilverLight one, and a .NET managed one. But underlying that, that whole protocol is completely documented and available to you. So if you want to talk from something that doesn't fall into one of those three categories, then you can go online to MSDN and look at our protocol documentation and see how that underlying protocol works. It's a little hairy, but at the end of the day, it's XML and JSON, and it's pretty easy to interact with from any system that can deal with, you know, HTTP. Okay, so digging into our scenarios, this is really the bulk of what we're going to get through. The first one that I want to talk about is just simply consuming data from Azure. So I talked about no external calls from sandbox code. So what that really leaves us with is external calls from the browser. And so you can do this in sort of, you know, multiple different ways, but things like JavaScript reaching across domains, SilverLight can do the same, and Flash can do the same, but you have to deal with some cross-domain issues if you're serving those components from a different domain or getting data from a different domain. So, for example, in my demos, I'm using client access policies to make sure that my SilverLight component can go over to Azure and grab data and come back, and I don't get a ton of security issues. What we're going to see in the example that I give is just a very, very simple one. I'm going to consume some data from the Azure data market, and I'm going to deploy a component in Windows Azure that uses that's sort of our intermediary between SharePoint Online and the data market, and then we're going to expand on that example in the next scenario to show you how to reach into on-prem systems. So this really just sort of sets the stage. It's a very simple example, and it uses SilverLight, a SilverLight component deployed into SharePoint Online to reach into our web service in Windows Azure, which in turn reaches into the Azure data market to get that data back. You can tell I've been in America too long. I'm mixing data and data way too much. Yeah, that was honeycomb. Good call. Come on down. Okay, so let's get started on a little demo here. That one caught me by surprise. There we go. Well done. All right. So I've got a demo machine here. It's basically got all my dev tools on it. It has SharePoint on it. I'm not actually going to use SharePoint in this example. We're just going to use Visual Studio and some of the Azure management tools and so on. But I want to show you a real simple example here. So let's flip over to IE briefly here. Now, I just wanted to show you the data that we're going to be using. So if you haven't seen the Azure data market, I suggest you go take a look. It's got a whole lot of interesting data sources. I love using it for demos. The one we're going to use today is from data.gov, which basically supplies crime data from the states. And you can come into a particular data set. This one's free. I can come in and explore this data set. I can add queries to it and so on. So for example, I just want to find crime data from Washington, because that's where I live. And you can see a whole bunch of data comes back. So this is the same data set that we're going to be tapping into in our solution. Now, the next thing that we're going to do is deploy, or I will have pre-canned this, but we're going to look at a solution I've already deployed into Windows Azure, which is going to act as the intermediary between SharePoint Online, our SilverLight component, and this data set. And so if I flip over to my, let me just close these out, my management portal, I've got a few solutions already deployed that we'll go through in each of the different scenarios. But the main one here that I will have already deployed is called Get Crime Data from Azure. And this is simply just a WCF web service that I've deployed as part of a web role into Windows Azure, which in turn calls the Azure Data Market web service, pulls the data back, wraps it up and sends it back out to whoever calls us. So I've deployed that, and we're going to walk through the code in a minute, but I just want to show you what that looks like from an endpoint and data point of view. So I've hooked up in my WCF test client here, I've hooked up to that web service that I've deployed into Azure, and so I can simply, I just want to make sure I'm going to get data back from this my Azure component that I've deployed, and you can see those same rows basically coming back from my web service. So I know that this is working, it's being that intermediary, and now what we need to do is stick the SharePoint Online piece in front of this that consumes that data. So let me jump over to my solution here and just walk you through the various pieces of this puzzle. So there are a few bits here I want to show you. There are four main projects, really only three that we're going to talk too much about, and one that's the Azure packaging project. The first one is a Silverlight component. So this is going to call our Azure web service in the cloud and request that data. And so you can simply see here I have a service reference to that same web service that I called just before, which is deployed at cjdemo.cloudapp.net, WAC Azure Crime Data Service.svc. So that's the service it's going to call. The next project, so this simply just lays it out in a sort of a grid and a graph. You'll see that in a minute. The next project is the Azure packaging project. So this is really, there's nothing really too interesting in here other than it takes our Azure package that we're going to talk through in a minute, packages it up and knows how to deploy it and unpack it in Azure and so on. That's that project. The next one is the WCF service that I've deployed, will deploy or pre-deployed into Windows Azure. And this is really that the intermediary that I talked about before. So it's going to call out to that data service, get the crime data back, package it up for us, and then give it back to the Silverlight component. And then the final project here is the SharePoint project that knows how to take that Silverlight component, wrap it up in a web part, and build a WSP for us. So for example, I'm not going to get into all the nuts and bolts of this, but basically there's two main components of the solution that we need to understand. The first is the ZAP file. This is a module component that I've added to my SharePoint project that takes the compiled ZAP from that top project in our solution and packages it in that WSP, and when it goes into SharePoint Online, it unpacks the WSP, obviously, and puts that ZAP file in a document library for us, or in a folder. The next piece of the puzzle that we need is the web part. And so this crime data web part, this is a what we call a visual web part. If you're familiar with user controls and so on, we do some magic to wrap user controls in a web part and deploy them to SharePoint. But it, for all intents and purposes, it's very similar to a user control. You have an ASCX file, you have code behind and so on. And so this is the guy that is simply going to, if I look at my ASCX, real simple, it's just an object tag on the page that's going to instantiate that Silverlight component that I built and put it on the page. So real simple. Now remember, this scenario is really just setting us up for the money shot in the next scenario of getting data from on-prem, because we know where most of our data lives today. Okay, so what does this look like? Well, let's jump over to my team site here, and if you notice up in the URL here, this is my SharePoint Online site, chjohn.sharepoint.com. This is where I'll be doing most of the demos today. And so this is running on SharePoint Online today. Let's hope our internet connectivity is all good. And I've pre-deployed that WSP package. So in Visual Studio, I hit F5, I packaged it up, I debugged it all locally. You can do all those with the, do all that sort of stuff with the tools. And then I simply went up into SharePoint Online and dropped that in the solutions gallery that we'll take a look at in a moment here. So our solutions gallery in the menu here just shows a couple of solutions that I've already deployed. You can see SharePoint Project 1 is my curious naming strategy for this project. And you can see when I uploaded it a few days ago and that it's activated. And so when you simply upload a file up into this a WSP up into this library, it'll put it up here, and then when you're ready to use it, you can activate it, which will signal to SharePoint to go and unpack it, make it available, and deploy all those features into your site. And obviously the reverse happens as well. I can come up here and deactivate it, and all of those components will be taken away from my site, uninstalled, and the web parts and so on won't be available anymore. Okie doke. So let's go and take a look at what this looks like. So I have a page that I've created in my site already. And again, my curious naming, TechEd Test 3. So this is just a web page I've thrown on here and put the Silverlight component. Very simple. It's just a sort of a a graph and a set of, and a table of data. But when I come down the bottom here and click this Get Data button, it's going to warn me about mixed content. And this is a warning because I'm running in an HTTPS site and I'm calling out to an HTTP service. So that's why I'm getting that. So I'll click Yes, I want to allow that. And with any luck, if IE doesn't freeze on me, we'll see that crime data, with any luck. Is today going to be a bad IE day? This doesn't look pretty. Let's come back to that. I'll just leave that running. We'll come back in a moment when we do our second scenario. See if it recovers itself. Okay, so what did we see? Well, in that one, a very simple example, basically just the ability to use a sandbox solution to upload a web part that has a Silverlight component as part of it that calls out to an external data server somewhere on the internet. In my case, I'm obviously showing you a WCF service in Azure, but that could be, you know, any data service on the web there. And then some of the services available through the Azure Data Market to be able to grab in data and consume it. Pretty simple solution. So, hands up, who has all their line of business data freely available on the internet already? Nobody? That brings us to our second scenario. No surprises there. Our second scenario is really about what happens when your line of business data sits on-prem and you want to get access to it externally or through SharePoint Online. This might happen if you've got SQL databases or Oracle databases or SAP or CRM or insert your random lob system here. Typically, your IT department doesn't, you know, make this stuff freely available over the internet. You may not have access to it for a number of different reasons. It might be accessible once you're VPN'd, or it might be accessible through some sort of authenticated reverse proxy if you're really lucky. But some of the things we're going to talk about today are some other options we have available. So how do you get access to this from SharePoint Online? So Windows Azure gives you a couple of opportunities to explore around this. The first is the work that's being done in App Fabric. And there are really two pieces to this puzzle that you can take advantage of to help you get access to data. The first is around connectivity to that data, which we're going to talk through today, which is around the service bus. And this allows you to set up basically a conduit between Azure and the cloud and on-prem and have calls relayed between the two. And so you can have a piece of code running in Azure, a piece of code running in your on-prem environment, and have a nice little tunnel set up between the two that let you make or relay calls between the two. The second piece of this puzzle is how you secure that tunnel or how you secure that relay. And so we can use access control services in the cloud to do this. You're able to secure your service bus connections. For the purpose of my demo, I'm using real simple security. I'm just doing a shared, basically a shared secret type authentication. But there's a whole lot of different options available to you in ACS. That could be everything from securing it with Facebook or Live ID or a simple shared token, all the way through to federating identity with your corporate directory, potentially, if you're using things like ADFS and so on. So all of those are available to you to help secure these service bus connections. The second one is Azure Connect, and this is more an option or a what synonymous with what you might think of as a VPN today. So this is a little component that you can install on your servers on your on-prem environment and have it tunnel IP-based protocols between you and your Azure environment. And so we're going to dig into a couple of the things you can do with that or how that works. So basically it creates that secure tunnel between our Azure servers and your on-prem servers supporting standard IP-based protocols. You could do, it doesn't have to be HTTP, for example. This is very, very sort of wide open and available to get access to all sorts of different stuff. It may be total overkill for what you need to do. And we're going to talk about service bus in a second for that scenario. You can call through this virtual network back to on-prem from things like web roles and worker roles and VM roles and so on in, running in Azure. Now, the interesting thing here is it opens up a really quite an interesting bunch of scenarios around how you connect to your line of business data. Because you can do things like domain join your machines in Azure back to your AD on-prem. And so it's able to participate in the same sort of security groups and IDs and so on that you get from AD. So that may be an option. Again, it may be total overkill for you, but that's certainly something you can do. Now, Service Bus is kind of a little bit more lightweight than that. As I said, it creates basically a relay of service calls between your Azure code and on-prem or something externally and on-prem. So basically, this is a very simple illustration of how it works. Over on the yellow box, we have our on-prem system. SharePoint list or lob box, that's sort of our depiction of where the data lives in this scenario. Above that, we have a listener service, which is basically a piece of code that's going to be the broker looking for service bus calls and then calling SharePoint, getting the data, and then returning it back up the chain. Again, that doesn't have to be SharePoint. It could be any sort of line of business system that you can talk to. And then on the Azure side, the purple box, we have that same WCF web service that I deployed earlier, or a very similar one, that same sort of concept. It's going to register with Service Bus, and so when calls come in to this web service, we're able to route them through the Service Bus back to our on-prem listener service, WCF, and then get the data out of SharePoint and bubble it all back up. Now, the listener for that could be, like the example we showed earlier, it could be a Silverlight component, for example, running in a web part. But there's also other scenarios that you could think about here around Windows Phone, for example, or devices out there on the internet. You could use this to help you get access to lob data. Obviously, you want to make sure you secure these in the right way and all those sorts of things. But it's an interesting technique for getting access to that stuff. So let's see how this looks. Okay. So what I've got here is a second project in Visual Studio. It doesn't look like IE recovered for some reason, so I'll come back to that in a bit. We come back to it in this demo, so we'll see how that goes. So the second solution I have, very similar to the first in that it has a web part, has some Silverlight in it, has a web service that I've deployed to Azure, but it also has another component that I want to show you. And that's this sales data service project. This is a real simple little command line app that basically is our listener that sits on-prem listening to those service bus calls and in turn is going to call SharePoint using the object model to get data out of a list. And so if we take a look in SharePoint, in my on-prem SharePoint box that I've got here, I'll just quickly show you the list that we're going to be calling. So this is on the domain intranet.contoso.com, which is running locally on my box. Wakey, wakey. There we go. So I've got a list here called sales. And in that list, real simple, there's a few rows, a few columns. It just has some basic information in there and some sales data. But this, for all intents and purposes today, this is our lob system. Not exactly the most sophisticated, but it gives you the right idea, I think. Okay, so that's the list on-prem. Now we've got the sales data service, which is this command line XE that I showed you. And really all it does is a couple of things. It really, when it runs, it really just instantiates an object that wraps up some work we're going to do here, and then sits and waits for a call to come in. And when a call comes in, it's going to give us a little, like a printf on the a command out on the in the command line, which is going to indicate that a call has come in, and so we can see when things are hitting it. Obviously, you'd want to do this as some other type of service. Command line app is probably not the best approach here, but for demos, it gives us a nice way to see what's going on. The rest of the solution is pretty similar. So I've got the Azure package that wraps up a web service that we're going to call in a second, that I'm going to show you in a minute. We've got another project, which is the XAML, the Silverlight web part, effectively. That's going, again, very similar to the last one, but it's going to call that Azure WCF service. We've got some resources for common classes and so on. The sales test app, that's that the SharePoint project that I wrapped up and deploys our Silverlight web part. And then finally, the SharePoint calling service. This is the one that gets sent to, gets deployed into Azure and is our endpoint for the Silverlight to call. So this is our middleman again in this example. It's slightly different data in that we're not calling the Azure data market anymore. We're calling the service bus to go call that on-prem endpoint to get data out of SharePoint. So what this looks like is in Azure, let me just jump on the management portal here and show you what this looks like. Again, this is just another project that we've deployed into Azure, very similar to the first. I've got another one I've pre-canned here. And so in this case, this is our SPLob service deployment, and our SharePoint calling service has been deployed into it on a couple of instances there. And so this is the guy that we're going to be calling. Now, obviously, to have all this running, we need to go and start that listener on-prem. So let's go jump back to Visual Studio briefly and get that guy cracking. So here we go. Let's right-click on this, debug, start new instance. We'll let this guy get set up. Basically, the code in that little helper that I had there basically registers with the service bus in Azure. It gives it its name, namespace, and shared key. Just have a quick look at that. In here. It's pretty straightforward. I said I was using shared keys for the security in this case. So basically I have a set of constants that I've defined in here, obviously again not optimal. You'd want to get these from somewhere else. But the bottom line is you give it a name, a namespace, and a shared token, and away you go. So the listener is going to, when somebody calls this and calls the get sales data call, it's pretty straightforward. We're going to get a list of data. We're going to get the sales list. We're going to write to the console that we've got that method called. We're going to open it up, and we're going to make a call to a SharePoint using the object model, get that data back, wrap it up in an object, and send it back out. So this is going to then bubble all the way back up to our Silverlight component. That's the plan, anyway. Okay, so our console app is running, and just to illustrate how this is going to work, I'll show you this WCF test client that I've also got hooked up to that second Azure project, the get sales call. And so when I call this, whenever you'll see a line hopefully pop up in this console app once it spins up, get sales data method called. You can see that. So that was our call to our on-prem system through service bus from our Azure WCF web service. So it got the data, and then you can see in the results screen here that we're starting to get those rows. So you can see, you know, 1, 2, 3, and so on. You can see the different data that we've got wrapped up there. And just so you know, I don't have anything totally up my sleeve here. Let's go change our data from our on-prem system from limited to Inc. Save that. We've got it saved in our SharePoint system. You can see up here that it's our contoso.com domain running on my local on-prem box. It's worth noting that this is all running in my VM on stage here, and the Azure stuff's all running in the production Azure system. So I haven't done any hokey weirdness with networking or where I deploy all this stuff. So then if we call our WCF service again, we should hopefully see that guy change from Jets from Limited to Inc. So we've got all that wired up. Now the last piece that I'm going to show you here is, let me jump back to my SharePoint Online site. There's really just a Silverlight component that sits on top of all this. Similar to the very simple scenario that I showed you before, it basically goes and grabs that data. If for some reason I'm having a bad IE day here today, we'll see if this is going to run for me. So again, Silverlight component, real simple, get data, show mixed content. Let's see if we got our call. There we go. So our third call came through, our data got returned, back up to our Silverlight component, got deployed, that was deployed into SharePoint Online. I put this web part on a page, and we can see simple data on here. Sure.
Is there any restrictions in where you can get data out of, like, the SharePoint in that example? So if there's a my site,
So the question was, is there any limit over where you can get data from in SharePoint? And the short answer is no. You can use any of our object model calls to get data out of wherever in SharePoint you like, whether it be from a my site or from a team site or through BCS to another lob system, for example. The long answer is it depends who you're running as, obviously, and you have to have permissions to all of that stuff. So that listener service, depending on how you secure your service bus call, and depending on how you secure or run that listener service, it'll depend on who you're running as and what you've got access to. So that's the sort of the more complicated answer with that. But the short answer is, you know, if you're running as somebody who has access to all the data, you'll get access to all the data. Yeah. Would you like a book? Sure. Okay. So what we saw, same as the very simple scenario, like I said before, most of the same components, except we sort of extended it with the service bus to our on-prem WCF listener. What I didn't walk through due to time constraints was how you set up the service bus stuff. It's actually pretty simple in Azure to do. You simply log into your Azure management portal. There's a service bus tab. You say you want to create a new one. You give it a name and a namespace, and you can set up in my case, I set it up with a token, that shared token, for security purposes. And that's really all I had to do. And then in your calling code, you specify those same parameters that you set it up with to wire it up to listen to it or to call it. So it's actually fairly straightforward to do. Who was that? There you go. Would you like it now or come and get it? There you go. So this opens up a realm of sort of possibilities on what you can do in Azure. And between the options of either having your lob data externally available through some sort of web service calls that you have today, through a reverse proxy type technology that you may already have today, like UAG, for example, if you're as an example there, and between Service Bus and the Azure Connect system, you have a bunch of different options available to you on how you connect to this stuff. So depending on what's available or what's possible in your organization, you can sort of slice and dice those up as you like. As I mentioned around ACS, this is really important for securing these calls. Again, I just use the shared token thing, but you'd want to think more deeply about how you connect to your line of business data from remote systems. And so obviously you're going to have one of those nice long talks over coffee with your IT department on what's going to be required and how you need to secure the system. But with things like ADFS becoming far more popular, this really opens up a realm of possibilities in that regard and makes this problem a whole bunch easier to solve. So the question was, have I seen any performance improvements over Azure Connect versus just regular WCF calls? No, I haven't, but that doesn't necessarily mean there haven't been. It's just my experience with it. I haven't noticed. But I don't have any hard evidence on that. Would you like a book? Absolutely. All right. Sure. Okay, so what happens if your data is in SharePoint Online, but you want to get access to it from SharePoint on-prem or from some other system like Windows Azure? So say you've got a website that you've built, taking donations or something. And you want to store that information in SharePoint Online so that you can then work on it and do stuff, collaborate on that information, and so on. So this brings up a couple of interesting problems. The first of which is how you reach into it, what sort of data APIs you use, and so on. And the second is how you authenticate with it. So around the data APIs, you've got the same sort of stuff available to you in SharePoint Online as you do with SharePoint On-Prem, in that you can use the JavaScript client-side object model, the SilverLight one, or the .NET managed one as well. And in the example I'm going to show you, we're going to show you how to reach, or I'm going to show you how to reach from a web role in Windows Azure back into SharePoint Online using our object model and dealing with the authentication challenges that we have there. We're going to go a little bit, this is kind of overselling the 200 level piece of the talk here, in that we're kind of going a little ninja on this. It's going to be a little bit more hairy, and there's a bunch of different concepts in here, but I think it's really important to cover, because it means that if you're, you know, if you're investing in putting stuff into SharePoint Online, you obviously want to leverage that from all sorts of places, not just a browser that people use. And so I think it's really important that we talk about how you can get access to that data both programmatically in a headed and headless way. What I mean by that is taking a step back for a second. SharePoint Online is secured out of the box by what we call the Microsoft Online Services ID. If you're familiar with Live ID, it's very, very similar, but it's not Live ID. So that's the first thing to understand. It's a separate authentication system, looks and feels extremely similar to Live ID. In fact, its roots were Live ID, but it's forked and devolved and evolved from there. So that's the first thing. So now we need to understand how we authenticate using this ID system. And really, there are two main scenarios that this falls into. The headed scenario is where a user is present during the authentication. So for example, this might be, this is synonymous with if you want to open a document in, Office, maybe in Word or something, from SharePoint Online, you'll hit the link, Office will open. If you're not already authenticated, it'll pop a box and ask you to authenticate. So that's kind of a headed scenario where a user is present, they can enter their username and password and so on, and continue. And now that piece of the puzzle, the protocols and the various techniques for doing that are documented in what we call MSOFBA, which is Office Forms-Based Authentication Protocol, documented on MSDN. Again, it's all open, and you can go read that if you really want a good night's sleep. And then the second system, or the second scenario here, is headless, and this is probably, you know, more interesting for the because of the Azure slant on this talk, where we want to authenticate with SharePoint without a user present. It's just code running in the cloud, and so there's a different technique we can use for that, where we don't want to pop up a browser and ask for credentials, where a client, where a person is not present. We want to do it completely programmatically. And so we're going to spend some time looking at that in particular. The example I'm going to show is that in particular. So how this works. So the illustration I've got here is really simplified, but I think it sums up the kind of the main sort of pieces of the puzzle and the main cogs that move in the solution. So over on the left-hand side, we've got a piece of code running in Azure, our Azure application. In my example I'm going to show you in a minute, this is going to be a web role, and it's just going to be a super simple website. It's just got a button on it, and it's going to retrieve the title or the name piece of data from SharePoint Online programmatically. Over on the right-hand side, we've got some Office 365 components. We've got SharePoint Online, and then we've got some WYSI lines and so on between them. But the crux of what happens here is when you want to authenticate from Windows Azure code to SharePoint Online, it happens in really two steps. The first step is you need to provide a set of credentials to the Office 365 authentication system and get back a authentication. If it's obviously valid, we'll reject you if it's not. But that packet contains a username and password, for example. If we pass the check and we say, yes, you're a valid user, then we issue a set of cookies that we want to go back to that code that are basically a security token that say, this person's authenticated, And you can continue to use these cookies on subsequent calls as part of the authentication, so you can, you know, go and get data. So that cookie will go back to our Windows Azure code, which will then attach to subsequent API calls that we make to SharePoint Online. So in this case, my Azure app is going to go back to SharePoint Online. It's going to use the client-side object model to do that. And what we're going to do before we make the call is we're going to attach those authentication cookies to our client-side object model call so that SharePoint Online knows who we are and doesn't reject our calls. Now, typically, this is stuff you don't have to worry about on-prem because the CSOM deals with this under the hood for sort of the most common on-prem authentication scenarios, like Windows authentication, for example, or just out-of-the-box basic SharePoint forms-based authentication. But Office 365 and SharePoint Online are slightly different. We need to authenticate with that ID system first, and then we need to provide those cookies to it. Now, although we're showing like an example of authenticating against the Office 365 ID system here, you could sort of replace that box with whatever ID system you end up federating with or using. The same sort of flow occurs. Now, to get through all this, this stuff is not for the faint of heart under the hood. It uses a bunch of interesting protocols and calls and things like the WIF, which is the Windows Identity Framework Foundation, and so on. And so we've written up a bunch of information about how these things work. The headed scenario is documented on MSDN in a white paper that we published, and then also on my blog, blogs.msdn.com/cjohnson. You'll find these blog posts there. And we shipped some sample code for both of these scenarios to show a very, very simple example of how to get up and running, and we've supplied a bunch of helper libraries and so on to get up and running. So the question was, does it deal with two-factor authentication, like if you're using RSID or whatever it's called? The example that I show doesn't, but this same box back here on the previous slide, a very similar flow would occur. Instead of the headless example is interesting because two-factor authentication kind of assumes somebody's there to do the two-factor thing. So it's more of a headed scenario in that case. But the flow is very similar. Instead of going and talking to Office 365, our STS, and getting a simple username and password authenticated, you'd need to know about how you dealt with authentication and obviously be calling that second, that different service to do your authentication. And that could take a bunch of different forms. And two-factor authentication, you know, often you've got a box you've got to enter some numbers in or provide a certificate or what have you. And so a user ends up being bounced around to that authentication system. So in the headed example, if you're securing or if you've federated with Office 365 and you're using that different authentication system, there shouldn't be any work you need to do to get this done. Because you're popping a browser, and you're hitting SharePoint and it's redirecting you to the right authentication provider, you should end up at that same flow as if you were just accessing it through a full browser, as if you're hitting a team site. So the headed example shouldn't be too complicated to get resolved. The headless example, who knows, depending on how you can talk to that other authentication system and so on. So I think that's a little bit more complicated is the short answer there. Both of the blogs, we've got write-ups on both of these different scenarios and code samples included with both. The second one is just on my blog at the moment. It's not up on MSDN. That's the headless one. And the code sample that I'm showing you today is from that same code sample that I've got online there. Okay, so let's take a look at what this looks like. Go-Go Gadget laptop. Well, that is not a good start. Everything's just gone dark. Nobody's home. Okay. Let me give this the three-finger salute, and I'll come back to it in a second. Gosh, demo gods are not with me today, I tell you. Okay. I'll wait for this thing to come back up, and then we'll jump back to that demo. But for now, we'll just move along, and we'll come back to this in a sec. Goodness gracious. What a start to the day. We'll summarize this when we come back, but basically what you will see in the demo is a web role that I'll deploy, a couple of helper classes that are included in the sample code that we ship that we're going to use to help make the calls to the Office 365 STS, which is really just a bunch of WCF calls, but it's there's a bunch of things you've got to understand about what's inside those. And so we ship another framework, the Windows Identity Framework, that helps you deal with all of those sorts of things. And the sample shows you how to do that. So we make the call to the STS. We authenticate. We extract all the cookies out of that call. And then we come back, attach those calls to the CSOM, and then make subsequent calls back to our SharePoint data. And away we go. So again, I'll just wait for this thing to come up, and we'll come back to that. So you'll see all this stuff in a minute. Now, identity and security, obviously a huge topic and probably warrants an entire day all of its own, but I wanted just to touch on some of the options that are available to you in some of these different scenarios that we've seen today. So just to really summarize some of the things that are available, in the simple scenario where I showed you just a WCF call from Silverlight being proxied through to the Azure data market, you know, you've got some options available to you. If you want to secure that web service that you deploy to Azure, you can hook it up with Azure ACS. You could federate it with ADFS, for example, to make sure that calls to it were secure. If you want to call SQL Azure instead of that web service, you can also use SQL Azure authentication that's available too, similar to SQL on-prem. Or you could do something sort of funky with certs and setting it up with the web service that sits up in the cloud and dealing with certs on the clients if that was also an option to you. In the hybrid scenario where you've got both, where you've got your data on-prem as opposed to somewhere externally available, then it gives you a couple of other options. The Azure Connect piece allows you to do that Windows auth that I mentioned before, being able to connect your code up in the cloud to SharePoint, your line of business system potentially on-prem and secure it using whatever you like, actually. You know, you could domain join it, as I mentioned, have it part of your AD, or talk to an authentication system that you have on-prem. And really, Azure Connect opens that up because it's kind of like that's synonymous with that with the virtual network that I mentioned. And so it really opens up a plethora of kind of options for you there. The option I showed you was that shared token option, that very simple shared secret type stuff. And then into SharePoint Online, you have a couple of options as well. You know, we talked through the online ID and some of the challenges around authentication that spits up and how to deal with them and the options that are available there. You can really tackle this in a couple of ways. You can either call SharePoint Online and impersonate somebody, i.e., you know, Joe Bloggs, pass that word one, that sort of stuff, and impersonate somebody who has an account in SharePoint Online. But really, the better way to do this would be to set up a service account in SharePoint Online that you use for making calls into your data. And so the good thing about service accounts is they don't count towards your user quota in SharePoint Online, so you can, I think you can have 5 of them, I think that's the limit. I'm not sure if that's entirely correct. But you can create these accounts. They don't count towards your user quota, and you can manage them separately from a regular user. So, you know, same sort of thing as if you're impersonating a user on-prem. You know, if they leave the company or if they change their password and password expires, or if they've, you know, you have very little visibility into what they've done if you're using them to access all these different things on other people's behalf. And so I'd strongly recommend looking into something like a service account if that's an option for you too. So my box has come back up here. Let's just see if I can log into it. See if my VM's awake here. I blame video drivers personally. Okay, so let me walk you through the code that we're going to deploy into Azure that uses the sample that I mentioned, and that's going to show you, you know, what's involved under the hood in a web project to do this authentication. Now, my example, I deploy in a web role to Azure, but you could equally use this code from whatever system, wherever it happened to be, whether it would be an on-prem system or a piece of code running in Azure. The techniques are exactly the same, but for this example, I'm just going to show you what it looks like in Azure. So again, my solution's pretty simple. I've just got a web project that gets wrapped up as a web role and deployed, and I've got an Azure project that does all that wrapping and packaging and all that stuff for me. Now, the guts of the solution that I've got here, there's a couple of interesting bits here. There's two helper classes, msonlineclaimshelper.cs and wcfclientcontracts.cs. These are two helper classes that are available in the samples, but they help wrap up the calls using the WIF framework foundation to the STS to get our calls. So I'm not going to walk through all of that code. You can do that at your leisure, but I'm going to show you how to use those helper classes. So our project here is really simple, right? It's just got a simple button on a page, an ASP.NET page, and a label that we're going to come back and return the data and stick in the label. So if we take a look at the code behind for this, it's pretty straightforward. So the button clicks. In my case, I'm just to show you the sort of the impersonation technique of just using a username and password, using a username and password I've already set up in SharePoint Online, in my SharePoint Online tenancy. Any of you could copy these down and log into my site today if you like. Please don't. They're not set up as an admin. That would be a total shocker, but never mind. Okay, so it's pretty simple. The MS Online, the claims helper class here basically takes the username, the password, and a link to the site, which in my case is chjohn.sharepoint.com, and is going to wrap up the calls to those WCF services on the STS and make our calls for us. And then what's going to happen is we're going to instantiate a client context, which is the client-side object model, and we're going to simply make a request for the properties of this particular web that we're interested in, and then grab back the title from that web and stick it in that label. And so when this happens, what happens here is this last piece of code here I want to show you is what happens when the call gets made. And so this executing web request is an event that's fired by the client-side object model when a call is about to be made. And that's important because what we need to do is take those cookies that we've authenticated with Azure and attach them to the call before we finish up and actually make the call to SharePoint Online. And so between the claims helper and this executing web request, we send the username and password to the Office 365 service. We grab the tokens back. We grab them off the cookies, and we stick them in the web request. And we do that just by moving the cookie container from our helper to our web request. And so this cookie container contains those authentication cookies. Something to note is there could be one or more of these authentication cookies come back from SharePoint Online for all sorts of different reasons. There could be more, but it's important to know that you need all of them. By default, I think you'll see two come back and that you need to attach to the client-side object model calls. And so simply when you run this, I actually have one already deployed into Azure. Let me show you what this looks like here. A real simple web page, obviously out of the box ASP.NET page here. I've got my Do Stuff button, and when I click my Do Stuff button, it's going to reach into SharePoint Online, grab the title of my site, and bring it back. And you can see here that we have CJ's Tech Ed Team Site as the title that came back. If we jump off into my SharePoint Online site and take a look, that's the same title as we have over there. It's going to ask me to authenticate. Let's see if I can remember my password. Wonderful. So you can see CJ's TechEd team site here. Again, we could jump in and change the title of this. Have that reflected up in here. And then back on our Azure site, go in and retrieve that title. So that piece of code is wrapping up the calls to the STS, authenticating us, giving us back the cookies, and then we're sticking it on the client-side object model and making calls. Now, the last thing I just briefly wanted to touch on here is what this opens up for you when you combine all these things together. So given that you can now reach across boundaries out of SharePoint Online using client code, you can reach back in to SharePoint Online using headless auth, then you kind of get this sort of combined model where you could go and build an app, a fully featured web app, whatever you can do in Azure, deploy it to Azure. It uses the client-side object model to get back into SharePoint, but then you can bubble that app back up into SharePoint Online through something like iframing or a web part or something like that. And so combining the kind of two there gives you a few different options. You're not stuck in the sandbox in SharePoint Online. If you want to build a really fully featured web application with all bells and whistles, you can deploy all that code off into Azure, consume it in SharePoint, or bubble it up in SharePoint in this sort of way. That could be another option there. Okay, so before we jump into some questions, I just wanted to summarize a couple of things here. Client-side code for external calls is basically your option for SharePoint Online today. We're working on solutions for doing this in the future, in future updates and releases to SharePoint Online, but for now, client-side code is your way to go if you want to reach out to external data services, whether that be Flash or Silverlight or JavaScript or what have you. You could look at using the Azure services that are available for reaching across boundaries to get access to on-prem data, either through those couple of different options we talked about, and one that I showed you with the service bus. And then finally, you know, leverage SPO for what it's good at. If you're building SharePoint solutions on-prem or in the cloud or external solutions that you need to interact with data, you can, you know, leverage your data that's up in SharePoint. You could build on it that's up in SharePoint Online, whether it be to store simple list data or documents or what have you, and leverage those from your custom solutions. So use SharePoint for what it's good at. If you want to collaborate on data and all that sort of stuff, you know, certainly look at it for that and augment your solution, potentially using SharePoint Online to do that, or potentially using SharePoint on-prem to do that, obviously. Oh, that was a quick one. Hold on. 1, 2, 3. Go again. Oh, he was first. Sorry. We had to have a bake-off. Okay, some things that you might want to take a look at when we leave. We have entire training kits online that cover off a lot of the things that we've talked about today. If you're a developer getting used to SharePoint, or you're new to SharePoint, or you're new to Azure, I really suggest you go take a look at this SharePoint and Azure training kit we have available. It's up on msdn.com/training. And it has a whole bunch of videos, presentations, hands-on labs, sample code, and walks you through a whole bunch of interesting scenarios for getting up and running with SharePoint and Azure. It doesn't specifically limit itself to just SharePoint Online either. There's a bunch of other things that it does. It shows off that you can do with SharePoint on-prem with that. Additionally, if you have the opportunity, we have a conference in October specifically dedicated to all things SharePoint. It's in Anaheim this year. We've hired Disneyland for a party, and we have sort of 6,000 of our closest friends turning up, 240 sessions, 220 speakers that are showing up for this. It should be an absolutely stunning event. So if you are able to make it, that would be absolutely wonderful. Is anybody going? Anybody here? Nobody. Surely somebody. No? Never mind. Well, if you can make it, that would be absolutely outstanding. If you want, there's one closer to home that's coming up next year in Melbourne, and this is a community-run conference. We have a SharePoint community, you know, one of the most vibrant communities out there, and we have a great set of people that run events worldwide for everybody out there. And in particular, this is one that is run by the community locally, both in New Zealand and Australia, and they've got one coming up in March next year. If you go and register with TechEd as the code, you'll get it for $675, as opposed to close to $800 there. So again, if you can't make it over to Anaheim, I highly recommend this guy. I've included some resources and just some links to the training kits, the blogs, and things to get you started. If you haven't played around with Office 365, just go to office365.com today and sign up for a trial. You get I think it's 30 or 60-day trial or something along those lines. They'll give you a tenancy. You can go create site collections and get up and running with SharePoint Online and just having a poke about. There's no sort of risk. You don't need a credit card and all that sort of stuff to get billed to sign up. And so I suggest you go take a look at that and see what's available. And then we have a bunch of interesting articles and so on that we post, both on my blog and then up at msdn.com/SharePoint is the main landing site for all things SharePoint development. And in particular, there is a resource center on that site, specifically dedicated to SharePoint Online, and it gives you a whole bunch of pointers to just resources for developers for SPO there. And with that, I'd like to ask the people that came up and got a book earlier on to come grab it, and I'd like to open up for questions. But thank you all very much for turning up at such an early hour. I'm very pleased to have you all, and I hope you've walked away with a few ideas about how you can integrate with SharePoint Online, how you can call in and out of SharePoint Online and start getting up and running with it. And so thank you very much.